Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Hey there, awesome people. Inside every one of you is an amazing, passionate, personal person. We get your attention each week. I will have guests and content that gives you the confidence to find the superhero inside of you. I'm Rob B. Lowe, a.k.a. The Iron Mind, the creator and founder of the Success Superpowers, building for you the mindset that never quits. After the show today, head to our main website, successsuperpowers.com, to appreciate what this could mean for your life. And this is our premiere show, and kicking off today, I have the esteemed pleasure of actually interviewing the founder of Coach on Fire and talking to Michael Brooks about what he has been developing in his life, how he has been bringing out his inner superhero to conquer and succeed in everything. Welcome, Michael. How are you today?
Well, hello, Rob, and thank you. We're talking 10,000 miles apart, which is pretty incredible in the digital age. And it's an honor and pleasure to be with you today. So I'm looking forward to your upcoming shows and, of course, this premiere. So let's get ready to rock it.
Certainly. And I mean, you've had a pretty amazing career. There's a couple of highlights you shared with me in our pre-show. And I just want to kick off with President Reagan and politics. What was Michael Brooks doing in that area?
For the United States, you do what is asked of you, but put on tax. And then during campaign season, we would go into campaign mode, and I would do a lot of media and image and branding, just like you would brand a business or a coaching practice or anything like that. It's basically the same thing with a politician, any elected official. It's a lot of it is image, a lot of it is branding, a lot of it is getting your message out and figuring out how to get that message out in the most efficient and effective manner possible.
One strategy that you were using for that level of branding and imaging, you know, what was one key thing you always went back to, Michael?
Well, we always went back to sound bites for the president. Now, you've got to remember, this was in an age before the internet. Okay.
Yep.
So we would sit there, and back in the day, we would call them actually radio actualities. And put that microphone in front of the president and have him give out maybe a 15 or 20 second statement. And then
yep.
circulate that to radio stations around the, actually literally around the world, but for the most part around the United States. And then they would use those in their radio news broadcast. And they were quite effective because the particular president that I worked for was not called a great communicator for no reason. He knew how to deliver a line, and he knew how to deliver it with punch and emotion. And it was always effective for us. And you know, as coaches and things like that, you know, Ronald Reagan couldn't have imagined live streaming or even digital radio or things like that. But the more succinct we can be in getting our message out in, for lack of a better word, a soundbite, the better mm-hmm. off we are in order to get them to hear the larger message. So for example, with the president, we would issue these soundbites, these radio actualities, and that would be driving traffic, basically, back to a speech or ad or wherever we wanted it to go. It would drive it back to someplace. We didn't have websites. We didn't have live streaming. There was only traditional television and traditional radio. And speaking of traditional television, at that time, there were in the United States only three major networks, and a fledging CNN, which was bleeding red, and no one thought it would survive as a 24/7 news service. So there weren't the channels available back then. From a small business standpoint, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, there's more opportunity today than there has ever been to get your message out. But a lot of those same principles that we use with the president still apply. Creating a short, succinct message to drive traffic back to wherever you would like to drive it, whether it's a website, a free offer, a webinar, or whatever that may be, is a very, very important skill. And it, Ronald Reagan was a natural at it, but it can literally be taught in how to do it. And yep. Usually the best ones are compelling, they're emotional, yep. And they're short. If you're looking at TV, then you also want something that's visual. So compelling, emotional, and visual would be the three elements we were always looking for on television. And there was, no one better in terms of the political world, certainly not in the 20th century and no one since in the 21st, that was better at it than President Ronald Reagan. He also used something else that I try to teach my people to use, but, it's more of an art than a science, and that's to try to use humor in such a way as to drive your message home. Again, no one was better at humor than President Reagan. And if you can, don't tell an off-color joke or something that's, politically incorrect or is going to offend someone. But, if you have a good joke that's relevant to what you're talking about, use it. And, practice the delivery in front of a mirror or something like that, because humor is very, very effective. And if you use humor and then you've got a strong and important message after that, it's far more likely that they're going to remember what your true message was. It's obviously not the joke. It's not the humor. But if it's relatable and you're delivering a message, then using humor and incorporating that in any way, shape, or form that you can is also very, very effective. And again, the president was one of the best in the world at that.
So what you're saying, Michael, is that perhaps the perception that we can have of the world is that sometimes we're a bit robotic in the way that we deliver things and system, and it's potentially to bring more of you into your own message. And if you have that natural flair and ability to have a laugh and crack a joke, that's something that you're indicating through your time with President Reagan that was really powerful. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it was insanely powerful for him. He was able to disarm his enemies and endear the voters to him by oftentimes making fun of himself. I remember one debate that we were doing during the 1984 campaign. Walter Mondale, a senator from Minnesota, was the president's opponent from the opposing party. And at the time, I guess there was a relatively close election. The president was leading in the polls, by a substantial number, but it wasn't, it wasn't beyond the realm of possibility that Mondale could make it a close race. But in this debate, which was a policy debate, Mondale started to criticize the president's age. He was one of the older presidents that we had had in a long time. And he started criticizing his age. And without missing a beat and entirely ad-libbed, the president of the United States sat there and said, and thank you, Senator, and I won't exploit your relative youth and inexperience. Just like that, the entire audience erupted in laughter. And Mondale was actually laughing. The senator was sitting there laughing, and he knew at that point the debate was over, because the only thing the media was going to be talking about after that debate was that line. Completely threw Mondale off of the game. He completely won the debate. No one remembers what the policy discussion was about, because the only thing people cared about was that one line. And it showed the president as likable, as funny, as engaging, as everyone's grandfather. And that created an image for the president that had him sail on to the 1984 election, winning 49 out of 50 states. And being on that campaign, we could have won 50, but we decided to give Mondale his home state of Minnesota.
We're in That's reach, very generous.
Which was winning back, and we pulled out about 250,000, a $25 million media buy that we were about to do in the state of Minnesota, and we were a bunch of obnoxious kids just out of grad school, and we had made the media buy because we thought, okay, we'll win all 50 states, and we're within reach in the polling, and we got a call from Washington, D.C., and said, pull it. Give Mondale his home state. You know, he deserves that. He's a nice man, and he really was a gracious, very, very great man. Just someone that, you know, that we disagreed with, you know, politically, but he was a terrific guy, and we gave him his home state, and the president went on to win 49 states. But that type of humor really, really helps. Now, I will say that if you're not good at delivering a joke, sometimes it can backfire. So you might want to practice a little bit.
Yeah, only do what you only do what you're strong at, Michael. That's something you know that's really key.
Only what you're doing strong at. But if you are good and people are laughing at your jokes and you've grown up as a funny person, use humor. If not, use a powerful statement in short and succinct language that gets your partial message across, so you can drive them to the larger message, to the webinar, to the website, to the sales page, the landing page, whatever it is, wherever you want to get them, be able to do it in 10 to 15 seconds. And that's quite literally what we did in the 80s with the president.
Yeah, so tell me then, in 30 seconds, Michael, what did Michael Brooks learn from President Reagan? What was the one key thing you learned about how to use your mindset? What do you think you took away? What was growing for you there with your inner superhero at that time in your life? 30 seconds.
Belief. Belief in what you do and what you want to accomplish. I can do it in 15. Ronald Reagan taught me, believe in your core values, believe in what you're doing, and believe that you can change the world.
Awesome. Awesome.
If you stick to that, then you're going to accomplish great things.
And look, I think if people want to know more about your quote-unquote war stories with President Reagan, they can certainly contact you, and there's contact information for you within our show piece here.
Yeah.
So please contact Michael and ask him more questions. We're not wrapping up the show. I'm just really keen to wrap into the second part of what I wanted to explore with you today. You're very strong about the belief. You believe in what you do. You create something around it, give it purpose and passion, and you can achieve it. I mean, I've heard you say that a few times now. So tell me about going to the Olympics. That has got to be a big story of belief. So tell me about that part of your life.
Well, my swimming story is an unusual one, but one that also reinforces what we were talking about with the president. Obviously, my Olympic experience was before I worked for the president of the United States, and it goes way back to when I was a child, and we're going to talk about belief here a little bit again. Because I was a 10-year-old kid, and I grew up in a very small little town where you could ride your bike all over the town. And my father was, an insurance executive. He was the president of an insurance company. He had a downtown office. And one day I was riding around and ended up at the public swimming pool. And the swim team was practicing. And I was observing, and I was looking around, and I was watching them, you know, go back and forth in the pool. And they had this big trophy case with all sorts of medals and trophies and things like that. And I'm a 10-year-old kid, and I'm wide-eyed, and I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, I want some of those. And then I go back and I watch probably for 20, 25 minutes, just mesmerized by the swimmers going back and forth and the coach, you know, coaching them and telling them how to turn and yelling and screaming at some of them for, you know, not doing what they're supposed to do. And others he was encouraging. And I decided right then and there, I wanted to do that. So I got on my bike and I rode my bike as fast as I could to my father's office and parked into the office, walked past his assistant, Mary, and she says, "Hi, Michael, your father's on the phone." Said, "Don't care." Walked right into his office and sat down with my arms folded, waited for him to get off the phone. And he said, "Michael, what can I do for you?" And I said, "I want to join the swim team." I quite literally thought he's going to fall off of his chair laughing. Because here's the problem. I didn't know how to swim. I did not know how to swim.
So you had a big passion, and it didn't matter to you that you really didn't know how. It's just that's what you were doing.
I didn't know how to swim. So my father, you know, sat there, and he said, "Well, I tell you what I'm going to," and I was insistent, you know, I had every argument in the book, you know, "Well, I can, you know, I can learn, I can do this, I can do this." He says, "I tell you what, I'm going to take you to the pool. We're going to talk to the coach. And I know that, you know, you have to do kind of an audition in order to get on the team. But I want you to agree right here that you're going to accept the result. And if the coach doesn't accept you for the team, you can take swimming lessons and what have you and do all that. But you need to accept what that coach tells you. Are you willing?" And so I said, "Yes." And we got in the car and we went down to the pool. And after their practice end, my father talked to the coach a little bit. And the coach came over and talked to me. And he says, "Okay, Michael," I'd gotten into my suit by then. And he said, "Jump in the pool and show me what you can do." And I thrashed my way across that pool. I was just horrid. I just absolutely horrid. Somehow I made it without drowning from one end to the other. And I got out of the pool. And, you know, my father's just kind of watching stoically there and thinking, okay, the coach is going to hopefully let him down gently. And, you know, and then I'll deal with that after the fact and give him swimming lessons or something like that. And I got out of the pool. The coach handed me the towel. He looked at me, and he said, "Give me 5, Michael. Congratulations, you're on the team."
Wow! What
and
a
I
cool
thought my
story.
Father was going to have a, I thought my father was going to have a heart attack. He didn't know that the coach was watching the same thing that he was watching. He struggled to get across that pole.
But
and
what
so
did the
I
coach
beamed,
see?
I'm
mean,
all of a sudden.
Yeah,
I'm beaming. I'm on the swim team,
yeah.
And my father, you know, talks to the coach, and he says, "You know, I'm not sure you're seeing, you know, with privately, I wasn't in earshot, but I'm not sure you're seeing what I saw, because what I saw is there's no way in heck he should be on this team." And yep. The coach says, "I can teach him to swim, but with that kind of attitude, with that kind of belief, he's going to be really, really good." And sure enough, just a few months, I'd won my first medal. And then, of course, went on to, you know, hit the USA national team and, you know, swam in college and was fortunate enough to make a relay on the Olympic team. And be an alternate in, you know, in several events. And so, you know, in 1984, Los Angeles, you know, unfortunately for me, it was my home country. So I wanted to go somewhere, but but it was, you know, but it was Los Angeles, and it was a great venue at University of Southern California. And then we had a practice pool in Malibu at Pepperdine University. And, you know, you got to march in the opening ceremonies. And and I got to meet a lot of Aussies that were very famous at the time. Shane Gould, who was a super swimmer from Australia. You know, and you had a good, you know, you had a good time, but it started out just with belief that I could do it and I wanted to win, and I wanted some of those trophies, and I wanted some of those medals, and this was going to be my vehicle to do that. And no matter how bad I was on that first day, I did everything in my power to get better every single day and execute what the coach told me. And he worked with an extra to get me to, you know, be able to swim. And just a few short months later, as I said, I was winning those medals and winning those trophies. And, you know, a year or two after that, I was on the national level. And to make a really funny story, my father went on to become the president of the swim club, the parents swim.
Wow.
And a lot of kids on this team were getting very, very good in Olympic caliber. So he spearheaded a fundraising effort to build an Olympic caliber pool in my hometown. And eventually this coach that had allowed me onto the team retired, and they hired a national level Olympic style coach for this small little town in California with an Olympic sized pool. And that pool today is named after my father. After my father passed away, they named that pool after my father. So from that one meeting in my father's office where he thought I was crazy, it not only changed my life, but it changed the life of my father. And then my sisters followed suit and became, you know, swimmers as well.
Yep.
Very, very good national level swimmers as well. And, you know, and my mother would fill out entry forms for the whole team. I mean, it quite literally changed our entire family's life. Just from a little boy's belief that couldn't swim, that someday he was going to win medals. And, you know, and I've seen that with other successful people. I obviously saw it with the president. Believe in your core values, believe in what you're doing, and you won't go wrong.
Excellent. Can I just touch on a few things there, Michael? I just want to make sure the audience is really, from a mindset perspective here, a 10-year-old Michael is teaching us some wonderful, wonderful lessons. And so is your father, because the way he, I guess, approached and managed the situation that you recount the story is just beautiful, because I think that one piece you talked about, acceptance, and it's something that I talk about a lot from a mindset perspective, is it's one of your first sort of fundamentals of really exploring the superhero inside you, is that There's some awareness you've got to create about yourself, but there's also a part about acceptance, right? Of acceptance of where you're at, where you want to be, and that's okay. I think a lot of people today, you know, and we don't have to be Michael Brooks, the swimming superstar on the USA team. It's just the everyday people, all of us out there. We have to be okay that we can actually accept a state and a position that we're currently in. And in that moment of acceptance, I believe, and I just want to get your thoughts on this, in that moment of acceptance, if it had happened to you, and it sort of happened one way or the other because you got accepted, but there's a real special moment of growth just in that acceptance. What do you think about that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think you're absolutely right that in that moment of acceptance. Now, what would have happened had the coach said no? That, you know, you're not ready.
Yep. So you've got the fork in the road, haven't you? You go, oh, well, stuff you.
Yeah.
I'm never probably going to be ready.
What happens at that point? And obviously that didn't happen to me. But what happens at that point? I'm absolutely convinced. And, you know, before my father passed away, we talked about this a little bit as well. I'm absolutely convinced that because of his guidance and because of the way he approached the situation, that I would have become a better swimmer. I would have said, okay, well, I'm still going to do this and I'm going to make a plan to do it. And I would have enrolled in swimming lessons and become a little bit of a better swimmer. And then I would have continued to try out until the coach finally accepted me. But the coach thought that my belief was so strong, hey, I'm going to be able to teach this guy to swim. That's not a problem. But with that kind of belief, that kind of attitude, it's going to be great because, you know, you don't see that very often. And what I saw at the Olympic level was exactly that.
Awesome.
Everyone believed. Everyone had a strong belief and a strong core vision that they could do it. And it wasn't about winning. Here's the other thing is amongst all the Olympic athletes, it wasn't about winning, especially in an individual sport like swimming. It's about getting better. It's about improving your time. It's about being the best you can be. The winning is going to follow. The winning is going to come. If you can execute, you can get better every single day. And years and years ago, I met a famous basketball player by the name of Michael Jordan. And a lot of people in Australia may know who he is. Others may not. But he was a very, very famous basketball player. And I asked him what his key to success was. And, of course, it was belief and then practice like hell. And he says, I would stay and I would practice free throws for hours after the practice was over. And he says, I worked harder than anyone else. You know, everyone thinks I have this natural talent and things like that. Well, I may have some of that, but I believe I can do it. But I also, because of that belief, will sit there and practice and practice and practice and practice until I get it right. And then I'll practice some more. That was his word. And then I'll practice some more.
I think that's,
so, I think that belief and that acceptance of where you are and then, okay, how am I going to get better? How am I going to get better every single day? And the best coaches in the world are not focusing on winning. They're focusing on getting their team or their student, if you're a coach in an individual sport, like swimming or track or tennis, getting them to execute, getting them to get better every single day. And with that repetition, with that practice, with that belief that you can do it and you can get better every day, the winning follows. The winning follows the, you know, okay, here's where I'm at. How am I going to get better? And if that's what you're talking about in terms of acceptance, absolutely. But you do have to have that belief, that drive, that discipline in order to do that. And, you know, and that, you know, is rare. Now, the people that we're talking to, you know, people in the coaching industry, people that are trying to, you know, make
business.
A difference in the world, I think most of them have a core belief. And then it's just a matter of enhancing that and making that confidence. Because their belief may not be as strong as it needs to be, and that's where people like you come in, Rob. You know, with your, you know, with your mindset and the crazy adrenaline programs that you do with, you know, with snowboarding and things like that, that allows you to believe you can do it. That's the one thing the Olympics taught me, and swimming taught me really was it gave me a belief that I can do anything. And the type of programs that there, I think, is absolutely awesome. Because once you do that, you know, take it for example, you're into snowboarding. Take for example, you know, going down that mountain on a snowboard for the first time. So you're a 5 or 6 year old kid. What kind of belief does that give you? I can do it. You know, I used to teach, you know, in college, I used to teach skiing for a couple of weeks during Christmas break every year up at, you know, Lake Tahoe in California. And, you know, because our family had a cabin up there and I would go up there and then I would, you know, teach the little kids, you know, how to ski for the first time, you know, and I might dress up as Santa Claus or something like that, but to watch their face, the second they could slide down and do that pizza pie, you know, on a ski and slide just a little bit, that the wide eyes, the thing, the awesome feeling that they had, that they just did something magical, that they just did that. That goes a long way. And sometimes we have to reinforce that with adults as well.
Yep. Can I just take you back a little bit, Michael? There's you've hit on two of the three key things I want to take from that Olympic experience. One was the acceptance, and then you talked beautifully about execute, following the system, following the instructions. Yeah, always seeking that the mindset is not the winning. The mindset is the competition within yourself, right, to produce a better outcome that you're seeking, you know, to be a faster sprinter, a faster swimmer, a better tennis player, whatever it may be, a better business person, a better parent. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You can apply what you've actually shared with us to anything in life. The key thing that, and you just started touching on it with the kids, I think it's a really good lesson that you showed around attitude, and also that your coach had the awareness to see that the technical stuff in life we can teach, and you've got to be teachable. And that's the one thing that everyone that's listening that I want you to clearly understand is that you already have all the passion and the purpose. It's just whether or not you want to be teachable about the technical skill, the system, the instruction that you need to follow to get the success that you need. And Michael shared with us a beautiful, brilliant story, a metaphor, an analogy that just cuts across life that says he was not a good swimmer, but he had the tenacity to be a good swimmer and the awareness and openness to be teachable. Is that a good summary, Michael?
Yeah, that's an excellent summary. I was open to being teachable because I believed I could do it, and I, you know, and from a little kid's perspective, I wanted those trophies and those medals. That's, you know, that at that time, that was my motivation. And so whatever your motivation is as an adult, whether it's to make a difference in the world or to make more money, for most of us in the, you know, in the coaching and consulting and mentoring industry, you know, money is, you know, what drives our passion or our purpose in doing this. But, you know, the money is a measure of success, and we have to have the money in order to keep doing it. So the money is nice, but it's secondary to the passion and the purpose.
Definitely.
You know, as an adult, you know, as a little kid, it was those shiny medals and shiny trophies that, you know, hey, I got to have some of that, you know. That's kind of fun. But here's the other thing, Rob, and what I've noticed with adults is they're the same way. I'm getting ready to launch a course coming up here very, very soon, within the next couple of weeks.
I've seen that in a beta program.
And that goes around that kind of same principle. What we find and what I find in going back to belief, and studies are going to back me up on this, is online education and online, you know, programs developed by coaches, authors, mentors, speakers. There are tons of them out there.
Yep.
And people are buying them. It's a billion-dollar industry. And what's happening, though, is no matter how great the content is in your course, 97% are not finishing the course. And that is crazy and disturbing to me, you know, and you have a couple of different philosophies there. Well, I provided great content. They need the internal motivation in order to complete it. Well, unfortunately, in today's day and age, that isn't good enough because most people don't have the internal motivation that I had in swimming or that, you know, you have had with, you know, with your career. They don't have that internal motivation. So they get overwhelmed, and the second they get into that first module and it looks like it's, you know, six videos and, you know, 20 or 30, 40 pages of reading, whatever it may be, and they've got six videos to watch in module one, all of a sudden they look at that and they watch maybe 15 minutes of it, you know, 20 minutes of it and read a little bit of it. And all of a sudden something clicks in and goes, this is overwhelming. And then they don't believe they can do it. So they purchase the course or they purchase the thing, and then they stop. And they never complete it. And,
so tell me, Michael,
and the figure is 97%. So there is an answer to that. Should I go ahead with your question, Rob?
Yeah, I just want to cut in there because I find this overwhelm a very interesting state that we can arrive at as people. And I'd just like to hear a little bit more from you about what do you think's going on in the mindset for a person when they meet this overwhelm and how's it? It's basically cutting out a belief, you know. It's cutting belief short. You know, I'll let you answer it, but just when you
that
finish,
is exactly right, Robin. It's cutting their belief short.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But why? Yeah, why is overwhelm?
Okay.
How is it being so powerful?
Because, you know, the short answer is from a psychological standpoint. The short answer is they don't believe they can complete it because that overwhelm kind of triggers something in their brain. And then they're not internally motivated enough like I was. As you know, now I had that internal motivation to learn to swim and to get good enough to win those medals and to win those trophies and to, you know, to go on, you know, at the national level. But most people don't have that mindset. They need to be trained into that mindset in some way, shape, or form. They are not internally motivated enough to take a typical online coaching course that's, you know, evergreen in nature and not having someone hold your hand. That's what I'm talking about in the 97% are not completing those courses. They don't have that internal motivation. So you have to go back to me being a 10-year-old kid in at that trophy case and saying, I want that and I want that, and therefore I'm going to do this because that's what I want. So you have to create courses today that are an experience, that's something more than just consuming information. And it might be creating a competition involved in the course, shortening up the modules, giving them something as a reward, whether it's an Amazon gift card for completing each little segment, creating a competition where, you know, the person that completes it first and, you know, and best gets something else. Giving them little rewards for each thing, just like you would do with a little kid or like an elementary school teacher might do, is, you know, applies to adults in today's world as well. Now, we can argue whether that's, you know, societally, why that is appropriate or not, why they aren't internally motivated. But let's just deal with the fact of the matter is 97% aren't completing it. They aren't internally motivated enough to get through a lot of overwhelming, complex information to where they're teachable to get the transformation that the original coach or mentor that designed the program wanted them to get. So, you need to do it in a way that deals with that external motivation. And I, you know, and no one's better than doing that than Walt Disney. And so I'm creating programs around, you know, external motivation and creating an experience rather than just a course.
All right, before we hit into that, Michael, I just want to throw this one at you. I feel I'm an advocate for shifting the way the personal development industry and coaching is seen, because I feel in my heart more than anything that there's a lot of people out there, a lot of coaches misleading customers. And I think that there's a real lack of congruency about how some people arrive at these programs. And this is just my perspective, and I want to get your thoughts on it when I deliver it to you. I feel that many coaches out there are selling an emotional journey that is sucking people in, and that is why you're getting the 97% not take-up rate. Because the 3% that actually do it, we're going to do it anyway, regardless of whether that coach came into their life. They were already set up and driven like you were as a 10-year-old kid. The rest of the population are being sucked in emotionally. They're spending money, wasting money, because they're not ready to receive the information that's there. There's a lot of building and a lot of foundation that goes in before that. And I can tell you, as a coach doing what I do, man, I spend a lot of time on the foundation. I will put people through their paces and processes to ensure that they're ready to receive, because otherwise I don't feel like I'm doing the service that I really set out to deliver in my life for people, because I'm just doing a transaction. I'm doing your money, my content, you know, and that does not work for me. And I see too many examples of that in our industry. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's two things there. One is you're absolutely right. First, you see the lifestyle gurus, where you see someone standing on, say, we're looking at a landing page. Imagine looking at a landing page, and we've all seen these, right? Where you've got someone standing next to a gorgeous woman that's allegedly, you know, his wife, in front of a Ferrari and a mansion and a swimming pool in the background. And the headline is, you can have all of this if you simply follow my system by clicking here and clicking there. And in 48 hours, you are going to be making hundreds of thousands of dollars simply by following my system. I've unlocked the formula, and that's all you have to do. So we've got that end of it, which is not exactly what you're talking about. And that, of course, is just appalling. You know, because coming from the background that I come from, you know, you don't accomplish anything without hard work that is associated with, you know, the belief and the passion and the purpose. You do have to work hard, and you do have to be, and that goes back to what you're talking about here, the foundational, you know, ready to accept it. So they're looking at a course here that they're not ready for because they've been sucked in to, well, maybe not the one that I was just talking about, but you've got others that are, you know, this is so easy for you to do. And, you know, and anyone can do it. They might not have, you know, the Ferrari and, you know, and the gorgeous girl and follow the system. And they might tell you, well, you have to work a little bit, but really anyone can do this. And all you have to do is take my system or take my course and follow that course and you'll be done. And it'll happen like magic. It'll be easy. You'll make money while you sleep, and you know, a few clicks here, a few clicks there, and voila, it's there. And then they get into the course. And whoa, this is a lot more work than I thought it was going to be. And they were conditioned to think that this is easy peasy, and it's not going to be a lot of work. So all of a sudden they click off of the course, you know, and their mind all of a sudden closes off. And they look at the course, they believe they can't do it. They believe it's a lot more work than they were led on to be. And they just kind of let it go from there. That certainly is, you know, is one reason. But also culturally, I think, you know, maybe this has happened in the last 20 years or, you know, or so long before, you know, long after I got out of, you know, swimming and politics and things like that, that culturally and educationally, we aren't set up for discipline and hard work and belief.
I agree.
What school is teaching belief? What school is teaching, if you believe it, Walt Disney says, if you believe it, if you imagine it, you can achieve it. And others have said similar things, but what school is teaching that? In fact, I've seen colleges that won't allow you to say that, you know, that you can achieve anything in your life if you believe, simply because it's not politically correct, and these liberal professors don't believe that. I've seen colleges actually ban speakers, you know, on that stuff, and, you know, and it's crazy. Yep. So maybe culturally we are setting up a mindset that needs to be corrected, which makes the stuff that you do so valuable. Yep. And we need to change that culturally, that mindset. And, you know, if you believe it, if you're passionate about it, we can teach you the technical stuff, but you have to be ready to go. But I also believe in what I'm talking about doing is, you know, is working with what is right now and giving them that external motivation by the competition and the rewards and things like that in order to deliver the transformation. And I do think as coaches and mentors, we have a responsibility, if we're putting something out there, to at least put them in the best position possible to complete it. I do think we have that responsibility. Now, I know a lot of coaches and authors say, no, you automate it, you give them good stuff, and then it's beyond you. But I think we have a responsibility to try to find a way. If 97% aren't doing it, and we can't change, you know, the cultural society overnight, then we need to find a way to deliver the transformation that we would like to do. Deliver with our online programs and courses, or any program or course, we have an obligation to the people that are enrolling in those programs to put them at least in the best position possible to complete it. Now, not everyone is, no matter what you do, but at least we need to put them in position there. And right now, there doesn't seem to be the internal motivation on a large scale for a large number of people to complete these types of courses for whatever reason. You know, I think the reasons that you mentioned are completely valid. And I think, you know, many of the reasons that I mentioned are completely valid. I mean, we could have this debate for, you know, we could have a full day debate of coaches and, you know, and things like that, and do a full scale retreat on that, where we're just coaches talking about, all right, how do we correct this problem? What's really going on here? And it would be crazy. It'd be kind of fun too, but we could go on for hours on that, Rob.
I certainly think so, Michael. And look, you've hit some really valid points about our education system and those things I'm very passionate about as well. And yeah, but I think what you're setting out to do with Win with Walt, I call it an approach, and I think that's fantastic. I just love the synergy that we have with the Inside Your Superhero show, because everything that I'm talking about on the show here is about the hero's journey. And you certainly demonstrated to us today that you have a deep appreciation and have lived, you know, your hero's journey. And as everybody does, you know, in this world, it's just sometimes we're not awake to it. And that's one of the key things I really wanted to get as a purpose with our show, is I want to wake people up. It's okay to be awake. Yeah, I think we've developed this, even this mindset, that it's not okay to be awake. It's not, you know, that go-getter stuff, that seek to achieve, go hit your desires. I reckon there's people around sitting, well, that's for the others. And I'm here to tell you, well, you're part of the others. It's just that you're choosing not to be at the moment.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's been a choice. Absolutely. Everything. I was writing a post this morning on Facebook. You are the commander of your choice. And that is it. If you can take
Absolutely.
That mindset and believe that, then you will achieve what you want to achieve. The only thing that stops you is yourself still. You know, there's nothing there. I used to think this, you know, 5 years ago, I would just think in that pattern. That's the others. That's the people doing that other life, you know. I'm in the bloody grinding life. I'm just grinding away, you know, and 9 to 5, going to work, grinding away, doing this. And then I woke up. And that's all I want for people in the world. You don't have to wake up and be something spectacular. Mm-hmm. Just wake up and be you. Just be that you that's inside you. And that's what we want to, you know, talk. That's why all the guests I've got on Insight, your superhero coming up, you're a fantastic. You've had some amazing achievements, Michael, but that's only in the perception of others who haven't achieved them. All the others have had amazing achievements as well. We just put your achievements. We have been told by society that if you go to the Olympics, well, you must be something special, but you weren't something special to begin with. You were just a boy with a desire who was there to be trained, got and had the attitude to achieve. You know, you've said it yourself that you couldn't swim to begin with. So how could you be uniquely gifted to swim? That's right. So your story is beautiful, and I'm really grateful for you for sharing that with our audience, because it's a true story of inside your superhero, this inner superhero that comes out in you. And look, just I want to give you a chance to talk about Win with Walt, but I'd just like to wrap up a couple of things, because you've hit on some fantastic points that really, really sit well with the Success Superpowers program and ideas that we have and the concepts that we use to teach people and coach people. You talked about very beginning, we're going to start with belief, and I'm just saying these ones, just giving it to the audience. Belief, right, has to be part of your core system of, if you're wanting to shift your life, if you're doing it without belief, then you're just going to go in circles. Acceptance of what is now and what can be. I think you need to move with acceptance through every part of your life, because shit's not going to go your way a lot of the time. And that's a perception that we'll carry, so get used to it or build something new around it. Attitude wins. You know, when you get up each morning wanting to do what you want to do in life, then you're going to go and do it. If you get up each morning going, not sure, then you're not going to go and do it. So attitude's key there. And I love this one about execution, Michael. It's one of my favorites. Yeah, if you get up and you execute, you follow that system, that plan that you've got, the instruction that someone's given you, you know, that is where success lies. And I think we've had a good discussion about the 97% non-participation rate for people in programs. I don't think that's just for coaching. I think that's generally, you know, you get people that start online education to be in business administration or in this or in that, and they don't finish it. I remember going to a seminar once where I was crewing for a guy, and there was I'd met probably half a dozen people that did the same amount of money, and it just blew my mind that people would do that. And I'm like, I'm standing there as a coach going, come and spend it with me, man, because I'm going to get your results. You know, that's what I'm thinking. Why keep coming back here? So I love that. And that's how I think sometimes. I see these people, and the other ones are ones that go to like Tony Robbins events. You know, they go to this 4 days, and I call it they expect to grow by participation. So just by being there, they expect that their life is going to shift. They don't understand that the next 12 months, 18 months, 2 years after that event is where the work has to still be done. You have to be working, working, working. I've been in this growth period for 5 years. I still work on myself every day. Day in, day out.
Absolutely.
You've got to love that. And I really thank you for sharing that. Can you tell the audience, because we want to give someone something teachable to take away, what is Win with Walt? How do we get involved? And what's it going to give me if I participate?
Yeah, well, we have one with Walt. Walt Disney is another, let me backtrack here just a second. Walt Disney is another person that embodies, like, President Reagan and all the people that, you know, that we've been talking about, just the ordinary people that embody the ideals of belief, imagination. Walt had that all, too. And what we're going to be doing with When with Walt is taking everyone through. It's a private Facebook group, but if you just, you know, go to facebook.com/groups When with Walt, we'll approve you and we'll come in. There's not a lot there right now. We're getting ready to launch a 3-day challenge. We're going to be talking about.
I'm there, mate. I'm in. I'm going to go. Yeah, I'm in. I'm there for you.
Okay, cool. Okay, we're going to talk about things like, what do you really sell? It's not what you think. And if you think about it, what does Walt Disney sell? I'm not going to tell you here. What does Disney really sell? It's not attractions. It's not theme parks. It's not hotels. It's not movies. It's not animation. All of that was a part of the Disney brand, but it's not what they sell. And so we're going to drill way down there with all the coaches that are in this challenge and the mentors, and we're going to figure out what it is in 1 to 3 words, what it is you really sell. And then I'm going to take everyone through a very, very unique brainstorming process that Walt Disney used for practically everything. This, you know, developed Snow White, Disneyland, almost anything that that Walt did. He ran everything through this brainstorming process, which is really, really cool. And it has 4 elements to it, and you're going to different places to do it. And we're going to do that, and we're going to imagine a new type of product for each of these coaches and things based on the principles and ideals of Walt Disney that will create more than just a program, but an experience for people. And then we're going to put it all together on the third day and kind of go from there. Now, let me say that Walt Disney was a lot more than just creating magic and experiences and rides and things like that. And Disneyland, if you've ever been there, is in fact a transformational experience. I mean, I know as a kid that I went with a bunch of kids from my neighborhood, and one of them went on to become an astronaut, and he credits to this day sitting in a rocket ship at Tomorrowland at Disneyland, and it was called Mission to Mars, and it was kind of a 3D type of thing, you know, when 3D was just coming out, and you sat in this rocket ship and it started to shake like it was, you know, going up into space. And then, you know, you would break through the atmosphere and you'd see all the stars, and then it'd get quiet like you're out of gravity, and it had a gravitational pull in the thing. And then it talked about Mars, and it was entirely educational. And, you know, what we know about Mars, what we know about the moon. Well, this young man, who was a very good high school friend of mine, went on to work in Houston now as a senior astronaut. And he credits to this day sitting in that spaceship at Disneyland as changing the course of his life, saying, I want to do that. I want to go into space. And sure enough, he did. So to say that Disney's not transformational, there's so much education there. But here's the other thing. Disney not only believed it could be done, he was a futurist, he was an innovator, and he pushed the envelope. But in order to do that and to create that experience, there's a lot that goes into the background that you don't see. Systems, processes, procedures in order to make the program and whatever the attraction happens to be successful. And that's all part of developing a program as well. Now, you know, it's not something that you can come in and this is, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be magical. It's going to be experience. But there's a lot of work that goes into that back end to create the experience for your client that will deliver the transformation that I believe you have a responsibility to deliver. So if you believe that you have a responsibility to put your clients in the best position possible to achieve the transformation that you are promising, then come join us at When with Walt. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a different type of Facebook group. We're going to, you know, talk about the different lessons that Walt Disney can teach us as a course. Walt likes to say, for example, that let's never forget that it all started with a mouse. Well, it didn't exactly all start with a mouse. And I'm going to do a quick video. It started with another character that was actually stolen from him. And how Walt responded is very, very important and changed the entire course of his life. And how we respond to things that happen that we don't like or that make us angry is essential to moving us forward. And Walt has a very, very important lesson on that and many, many others that I'm in the process with a video team of shooting videos, right now. So that group's going to start to roll out next week, and we're going to get the challenge going in a couple of weeks here. So you're more than welcome, facebook.com/groups, When with Walt, and go in there. And once we get going, I'd love to have you, and I look forward to meeting you all.
Excellent. Sounds exciting. I love the way that people in the world like yourself, Michael, get a bit creative about how we engage people with education. And I think that's what you're really pushing here is that that's what we need to do, because coaches are educators, and that's we shouldn't forget that. As a coach, yes, there's some things that we need to be responsible for in the way that we deliver, but ultimately we need to lead people to actually being the educator of themselves. And to do that, we have to. One of the beautiful things about coaching, Michael, and you'll feel this, is as the educator, always be open to being educated back when you're working with clients, because that's where you find the real growth of yourself. Been a fantastic show, and I thank you from all my
before
heart.
Before we end,
all my heart,
Rob, before we end, can I put on my Coach on Fire hat what I'd love to, this is going to be an absolutely awesome show, looking inside your superhero. And I'd just like you at the end of this premiere show to give our audience what they can expect in the coming weeks from looking inside your superhero. I know it's a show I'm really excited about on the network. It's a show we've needed for a long time. And what can our audience expect in the coming weeks from you and looking inside our superhero?
Well, I'm actually off to Anaheim next week, believe it or not. I'm hoping you do my show from Anaheim next week. I have an online business, and I can't tell you what it is, but if anyone wants to know what I'm up to, please just hook in. But I'm heading over there with, there's 9,000 people going to the global conference, and it's in Anaheim next to Disneyland, believe it or not. How coincidental is that?
Yes,
so
it is. Next to Disneyland. Very cool.
I'm going to have to be checking that out now. I can't not do that. I'm going to try and find someone over there and do a live, like person sitting next to me, do my, because I'll actually be on American time, and I'm going to try and, I think that's still the same time, 4:30 p.m. It's on the East West Coast. So
You're going to be in the same time zone.
I'm in
San Diego, Rob.
Yeah, so I'm going to try and find someone there who wants to come on my show. I don't know who it is yet, but I can tell you what, they're going to be probably someone who's got a lot of drive in health and wealth, and we're just going to do sitting next to each other, traditional sort of like a couple of people on a radio show having a good old chat about their superhero story. But I don't say this with any disrespect to anyone, Michael, and anyone listening. I'm lining up a lot of everyday people, people that are just in my network who are doing beautiful things, who are otherwise usually not recognized. And that's what a big part of Inside Your Superhero is I want everybody out there listening
to
realize that everyday people achieve greatness every day. But I've also got some really cool guests that are well known in Australia. And I'm working on a couple of global guests that everyone will be very familiar with. If you're in the leadership development industry or coaching industry, you'll know who these people are, or at least once you Google them, you'll definitely know who they are. And also spattered through there, I'm going to do some content. I'm going to give you more perspective about my advocacy for doing coaching the right way, the heart way, and really looking after you guys as clients and what you should be expecting from your coach. And this is my insight. I think we could do it a lot better. And if you're a coach listening to this, I think you can do it a lot better. You know what I'm saying, because it's a bit of a Jerry Maguire moment for me, right? Less clients, more attention. That always
more
just rings in my
there
head.
You go. Very, very cool, Rob.
That's it. That's what's coming up, Michael. And I'm absolutely excited to be part of this this radio station and to give where we can and just help people run this maze of life and achieve that desire that's just burning inside of them. So, yeah.
So it's an honor to have you on the network. Yep. Honored to have you on the network, Rob. We've got just about 30 seconds here, it looks like. So it's been a pleasure, and I'm excited about your show. And I'll turn it back to you to wrap it all up, and thank you again.
Yep. Thank you, Michael. So this has been Rob B. Lowe, the host of Inside Your Superhero, saying to you all, whatever it is that you're doing in life, wherever you are, whatever interaction you're having, always be present in life. Bye for now. So do I just push end episode? Oh, it's already done.
Yes. Oh, no. Play the music.
Play the music.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
All right.